Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So I didn't know I was going to be giving a talk until about 5 minutes ago. I thought we'd find a coin or something, but it didn't happen. As a community, just come off retreat, a 3-month retreat. And these times can be challenging, these times of bigger change. Obviously, we're experiencing small change all the time. It's constantly going on, but changes like from extreme quiet to extreme busyness, or extreme busyness to extreme quiet, can be quite challenging. And there are some people here who are going through even bigger changes, like from monastic life to lay life, or lay life to monastic life. And we have a very big world elders meeting coming up, which will be extremely challenging to the community. It will be a great time of interaction and joy, but the preparations are well underway already, and there are many monks and nuns busily beavering away in their offices, organizing accommodation, transport, just liaising with people all around the world, trying to get this thing to happen in a way which will be supportive and harmonious to all. And of course, it will be that to a degree, but there will be other things happening as well. So these times of change, these times of transition from one mode to another, can be extremely challenging emotionally. I remember my particular circumstances from shaving off my hair and eyebrows and donning the white for several weeks afterwards. I was in a slight shocked state every time I would look in the mirror. This strange alien would look back at me with a twinkle in his eye. And of course, the next stage to become a samanera and a bhikkhu, it was the same thing. There was this sense of being disorientated and confused and anxious, and what am I doing, you know? So this will happen for people coming in, but also for those returning to the lay life from a fairly quiet life. One may have to get a job pretty quickly and, deal with finances and transport, a place to live. You know, there might maybe be many issues to deal with all at once. I remember taking the 10 precepts as a samanera, and I was a bit all over the place at the time, and a very lovely bhikkhu named Tissero, a French monk who's now no longer with us. He's still alive, but he's no longer a monk. He thought it was an extremely good idea to take me on Bindabat the next day into Petersfield. So, of course, I couldn't keep my robes on already, and I was having difficulties with that and a bowl with a strap and walking across the fields. It was a lovely day, lovely spring day. The flowers were out and I was a bit disorientated, but I enjoyed the walk, about an hour and a half or so. So we get to Petersfield and it's a market day, so it's extremely busy. As normally, they stand opposite where the market is by one of the shops. So we walk into the town with our bowls and we stop and we stand, we wait. It's not like Thailand where you just walk through the village and people come running out to put food in your bowl. We have to be a little more patient in this country because this isn't a native Buddhist country. And so we're standing there and it's a strange feeling when you're used to wearing trousers and normal clothes and you're standing there in a robe and a skirt and holding a bowl and then someone drove by in a car and said, "Hare Krishna." And a few more minutes passed, then a couple of young girls walked by sniggering. And I just, time was moving by and I just thought to myself, I feel like a ripe prat standing here. What am I doing with my life? And then not long afterwards, another sort of thought arose, more of, it felt like a bit of an insight, but it was this little thought that just said, you've been trying desperately not to look like a prat for the last 15 years. You know, I've always wanted to wear the best clothes and the top fashions and good hairstyle. And I realized that not so much of that was coming from fear. You know, not wanting to look out of place. Not wanting to be criticized or humiliated. And here I am standing on a street corner with no hair, no eyebrows, feeling like a ripe prat in a skirt. And just feeling this stuff for the first time. You know, this sense of being, you know, totally out of place. Feeling a sense of humiliation or fear or a combination of the both. But it felt so real, so genuine. For the first time, I was no longer running from these emotions, trying to hide from them. And they were full on, they were in my face and everything. But there was something very, very real about it. You know, there's no way I could pretend that they weren't there or dive into some sensual pleasure to avoid feeling that way. So the changes in our lives, you know, they can bring up strong emotions. And this is probably one of the biggest challenges of our life, is to deal with emotion. For me anyway, emotion has been something that has crippled me. It's forced me to make decisions that I would not normally make in a rational state. Confusion, doubt, anxiety, fear, humiliation, shame, whatever it might be, desire, anger. And if we believe these to be who we are and trust them and follow them, then we're always going to be at a loss. You know, emotion is not a refuge. They take us to places of extreme pain and suffering if we follow them and believe in them. But we can't avoid them either. You know, it's part of the human package. We have to deal with this set of emotions that come with this human body and human mind. And all of these emotions that I've just mentioned, all of us will experience. The pleasant emotions as well, of course, but we don't mind them. We enjoy, you know, happiness, joy, pleasure, rapture, what have you. But the darker emotions, they're all there within all of us. And we have to deal with every single one. We have to allow it to come to the surface, manifest, and pass away without clinging. Without pushing it away, without distracting ourselves from it. And if we don't, they will just fester under the surface of consciousness, and we'll never know true peace. So the Buddha had a way of categorizing teachings to make them easier to remember. You know, he would categorize sort of emotional states. He'd put them into, say, the categories of the five hindrances or the three kilesas. And he'd put them in these categories, you know, just to make them easier for us to understand and identify. So greed, hatred and delusion, for instance, you know, all of us have these three within us. And we have a tendency to one more than the others generally. So people will say, oh, you're a greed type, you're an anger type, or you're a delusion type. And it is useful to know which you are. Doesn't mean you won't have the others, they'll all be there, but one tends to predominate. One tends to be more powerful than the other two. So the anger type, you know, this is someone who has a very critical mind. They see everything through critical filters, and they're quick to anger. To be irritated. Doesn't mean greed and delusion aren't there, but that's just maybe more to the fore. And the percentages, you know, they're not clearly defined. And then you have the greed type, and this is someone who loves refinement. Fine food, fine clothes, refined music, and they can't stand anything being out of place. Everything has to be just so. You know, if you were to go into their room in the monastery, it would be perfectly tidy, everything in its place, everything folded neatly. And they can't abide sloppiness or tardiness. And then you have the delusion type. Now, none of us really want to be the delusion type. We'd prefer to be the greed or the hatred type, but sadly someone has to do that. Someone has to be the delusion type. Now, the delusion type, I'll give you a couple of examples. There used to be an Anagarika staying here some time ago. And I went to knock on his room one day. And I didn't hear any response. But, you know, sometimes he was asleep. So I thought I'd just open the door a crack to see if he was in there. And I opened the door and I was just shocked. It was like someone had thrown a hand grenade in the room. There was stuff everywhere. There wasn't an inch of carpet that was actually, I could see. And it was a bit dull, the light. And I said his name, and there was no answer. So I was just about to close the door, and then there was this movement on the floor, and all these books and things started to come off. And it was a duvet, and underneath the duvet was this creature arising from the, whatever you want to call it, but so that's part of the characteristic of the delusion type. They're sort of a bit scattered all over the place, very confused, a very doubtful type and confused. And that causes a lot of thinking. So they tend to be up in their heads all the time. And so they're always sort of bumping into things, or you'll notice a delusion type because they'll have their clothes on inside out with the collar sticking out, you know. The label will be out the back. Or odd socks on or something like that. Or they'll have food spilled down their shirt and they won't notice, you know. And so I was discussing this once with my friend. And and I said to him, you know, I'm a greed type. And he said to me, no, you're not. You're a delusion type. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, thinking you're a greed type is part of the delusion. Cheeky thing. I said, what are you then? He said, well, I'm a greed type. I said, well, you're deluded too, are you? And he said, no, I'm a greed type. So I didn't say anything else. We just parted amicably. But on reflection, after a while, I realized he was right. I was a bit of a delusion type. So a very confused, doubtful, could never sort of settle the mind. I'd always be changing objects of meditation. And but on later occasion he said, no, you're a refined delusion type. I said, oh, I see. So a coarse greed type is more the sort of Anagarika covered in his debris in his room, but a sort of refined delusion type is someone who spills food down their shirt but notices it. So I'm not entirely ashamed to admit that I am a delusion type. And sometimes I wonder if it's actually true that I'm a refined delusion type, because today I was in the office and Severa had spotted some toothpaste on my mouth. I do thank her for pointing it out, because I do feel a bit frustrated when people don't mention it, and I walk around all day with toothpaste on my mouth. And a few weeks ago, uh, One of the Anagarikas mentioned I had shaving foam in my ear just before the meal. I was very grateful, but I sort of brushed it off and I said, oh, I always keep that there. Don't worry. But he wasn't convinced. So it's handy to know these sort of, you know, these three things, greed, hatred and delusion. You know, and these are sort of the roots for all the emotional states, yeah? They all come out of these. And it's very important to know how to deal with them. You know, a delusion type doesn't know how to deal with them because they get caught in their heads in thinking. Lots of thinking, spinning around in circles, and the emotions just, you know, churn underneath. So that's not dealing with them, that's getting more and more deluded. So the Buddha gave, you know, lots of wonderful teachings around this with mindfulness. And one thing that I have been contemplating lately is something called yoniso manasikara, what we call appropriate attention or wise attention. It's attending in the right way. And when we attend correctly, we starve greed, hatred and delusion of energy. And when they're starved, they get weaker. And when we're starving greed, hatred, and delusion, we're actually feeding the seven factors of enlightenment. So there's a balance here, and yoniso manasikara, appropriate attention is in the middle. And it's a yoniso manasikara, inappropriate attention. We're feeding the kalesa, we're feeding greed, hatred and delusion. And we're starving the seven factors of enlightenment. So the seven factors become weaker. So when you're caught up in your heads and there's emotion churning underneath, there's lots of confusion and greed and hatred, and we're taking it all personally, and believing it all and thinking it's permanent, then it's getting more powerful, it's taking us over, and we're moving away from peace, we're moving away from truth, we're moving away from the only and true refuge. And we're moving towards more suffering, more dukkha, more delusion, more hatred and more greed. So what is yoniso manasikara? If you like, it's mindfulness informed by wisdom. So the Buddha had this lovely saying, it goes something like this. The purity of perfectly balanced mindfulness built on the basis of knowing the way things are. This is liberation knowledge. This is the destruction of ignorance. This is from The Way to the Beyond in the Sutta Nipata, the last sutta. In the Sutta Nipata. And this is what it's pointing at. It's this wise attention. So wisdom is informing our mindfulness. So the purity of perfectly balanced mindfulness. So it's mindfulness built on the basis of knowing the way things are. So we have to know the way things are for mindfulness to be perfectly balanced. It's not going to be perfectly balanced without wisdom. So So basically it's the Four Noble Truths and the Three Characteristics informing our attention. So when these emotions arise and we're dealing with them, you know, we have to get below the level of thought into the body. We have to know thought as it is. You know, 99% of our thinking is a byproduct of emotion. So we suppress our emotions. And when we do that, you know, the emotions come out in the thinking process. So if we're suppressing anger, we have angry thoughts. If we're suppressing lust, we have lustful thoughts. If we're suppressing doubt, we have confused thinking. If we're suppressing humiliation, we have humiliated thinking. You know, these things manifest. The trouble is it can get more complex than that if we suppress emotion upon emotion upon emotion. We get this layered effect. And our bodies can become extremely tense and tight. And our minds can be completely lost and very intense and painful. So we have to take the leap of faith. We need to let go of thought. We have to leave it alone and not believe it anymore. It's not trustworthy because it's fueled by something else that's below the surface. So we need to leave it behind and move our attention into the body. The first foundation of mindfulness. Body. And then the second is feeling or Vedana. So we move down. You know, so much of our thinking is caught up in the head. And move down and take refuge in mindfulness. And feel life instead of think life. There's another lovely saying from the Buddha. Goes something like, dry up the remains of your past. Have nothing for your future. Do not cling to the present reality. And then wherever you go, you will be at peace. Very pithy and direct, but it's all there in those four sentences. So if we drop past and future, so much of our thinking will fall away because that's what it's about, past and future. And then don't cling to what's here right now. Don't try and get rid of what we're feeling or get a better feeling, a better emotion, and allow it to pass through. And then wherever we go, whatever we do, we will be peaceful. So in my experience, the best way to let go of thought is to spread the mind, or spread awareness, spread consciousness. Thinking is a very tight, focused state. And if we're an obsessive thinker and we try to concentrate the mind on the end of the nose, you know, the mind will all keep slipping off that and we'll get caught up in a lot of thinking. We need a broad, coarse foundation. So the first two foundations of mindfulness, body and feeling, we need to use those. We need to get into the body fully. So my preferred style is to feel the whole body at once, whole body awareness. You know, using breathing, the sensations, the emotions, also sound of silence as well to broaden the awareness. And what happens when thinking enters consciousness, a thought enters. For a train of thought to happen, the mind has to contract again around it. Consciousness has to contract and follow it. So you have a choice. You know, if the mind is spacious and open and aware, when that thought arises, we can see it, and we have a choice whether to follow it or not. And I would recommend that you don't follow it, and just stay in that spacious, open mode and allow the suppressed emotions to manifest and pass away. But of course this can be quite challenging, because fear and anxiety and doubt and confusion and humiliation and grief can all be very painful and difficult to bear with. But if you open your mind and feel your body and it's full of tension and knots, that's a sign you need to do that. You need to open up, because there's so much holding there, so much tension. And the more we do this, the more we will see that consciousness and its objects are very different, in fact. As Ajahn Chah used to say, "Jit ben jit, arom ben arom, gong mai man gan." This is like consciousness is consciousness. The objects are the objects. They're not the same thing. So the more we take refuge in awareness itself, in pure awareness, and notice the objects of consciousness, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile impressions and mental phenomena, for what they really are, as impermanent, suffering if clung to, and not who we really are. We see them more and more like that, then wise and appropriate attention becomes stronger and stronger, and the kilesas get weaker and weaker, and the seven factors of enlightenment grow, flourish, flower, and hopefully one day they will come to fruition. So because we can't get out of the present, we can't get into the future or get into the past, we don't have to chase after anything. That just closes the door, or push away anything. That just closes the door. We just settle back into the ever-present reality and trust in something that we may never have trusted before. Trust more and more deeply in pure awareness. We will see the self diminishing, the kilesas diminishing. And we'll have faith that this is the path. We can do this. This isn't too difficult. It's just a matter of getting the right perspective, the balance point. So as we are, pretty much immersed in our new mode, and we may be feeling a different level of impact externally and internally on the mind, this isn't a time to just stop practicing. This is a time to broaden our practice instead of deepen, widen our perspective with patience and trying to look clearly, see clearly the things that are arising in a different way. Opening our hearts and being patient with what's happening. Patient with others around us that we're having more contact. But definitely giving oneself to the practice, giving oneself to mindfulness in whatever we're doing, whether we're in the kitchen, in the office, conversing with people, showing guests around, or whatever it might be. If our enlightenment is only confined to the winter retreat, that's not real enlightenment, is it? It has to be wherever we go and whatever we do, that the heart has to be unshakable in that. It can't only be unshakable when we get whatever we want. So wishing you well for this next period, and I think that's enough for this evening.